This is El Puente Podcast, POC conversation at the intersection of race, sexuality, religion, politics, art, music, and everything in between. Don't just sit there, stand up. Don't just listen, join the conversation with Kim, Dave, and Michael.
The El Puente Podcast with Kimberly
and David
and Michael.
We're so glad to be here for another exciting podcast. And first up is Michael. He's got some really awesome things going on. So, Michael, why don't you talk about it a little more?
Thank you. I'm working on an exhibition of photography, installation, and a performance for Friday, May 18th at St. Edward's University here in Austin. I am doing portraits of people of color who live in Austin, as we've said on previous podcasts, of whom there are few of us.
Fewer and fewer.
Fewer and fewer all the time here in Austin. And so, yeah, I had this idea of doing these portraits where I take a photo of someone's clothing and then I project it onto them. And then I take a photo of them, and I project that onto their bed and do a collage with other things from their closet. And so, it's the final product, but it's also, I see them as like documentations of temporary installation. And it's the experience of having that time to speak with people while I'm making the work and just, you know, connecting people of color. So wow. It's been a really rewarding experience, and I can't wait to have the work up. And yeah,
that's
really
fantastic. Exciting, yeah. Where is it going to be again?
So it's going to be at St. Edward's University in their art department building. They have a gallery there, and it's Friday, May 18th, from 7 to 9 p.m. is the opening. I'm doing a performance at 8, and the exhibition will be up till June 9th. So if anybody is coming through Austin or lives here, please come by and check out the work, or contact me through here if you want to see some images or want to learn more.
Wow, looking forward to seeing that. That's cool. So now we are into Pop the News and Feed the Children for this week. And we've got some news to pop. We're going to be popping two major stories this week. Mike, what do you got?
So one that was really, really disturbing to me is about the, take a wild guess, it's about the Trump administration.
Duh.
They're ending temporary protected status for Hondurans, which is really, really, really heartless move.
It's mortifying.
Yeah. This affects like 57,000 Hondurans who are in the U.S. and have been here since about 1999 because of a hurricane and just like conditions that have not improved in the country and violence and lack of drinking water. And it's just a horrible, horrible place right now, you know, and they have this status here right now where they can have a productive life and, you know, and send money back home to family that may still be there to try to improve things.
And contribute to our society exactly. By offering the skills that they have
exactly.
as well.
Exactly. Anyways, but they're being booted out of the country, as have many other populations that have been targeted by this administration.
Wow. All populations of color, of course.
Of course, of course, yeah.
What's the justification that the Trump administration is giving for that?
They are saying that, so this was TPS, Temporary Protected Status, and it was, they're basically saying that it wasn't administered correctly before, so they're just canceling it.
Oh my gosh. It is outlandish to try to go back and quote unquote fix a mistake that they made and cause all these people to suffer because of their mistake.
Yeah, so it's kind of the same excuse they're using on the DACA program, of course, the deferred action for childhood arrivals program that Trump canceled himself. His argument was that, well, it was an illegal ratification of that act, and that he's rescinding it because it wasn't lawful, and so therefore his justification is, well,
instead of fixing it,
these other past administrations, you know, they didn't do it right, so we're just going to cancel it all together. Is that what you're essentially saying?
Yeah, that's basically what
it's like about. Freedom without reconstruction to me, you know, it's like you cannot, you know, give these people their freedom and then steal it away from them and expect them to be able to know how to readjust. It's absolutely the opposite of mm-hmm. reconstruction.
Yeah. And so we're going to send these poor people back into this horrible situation where they haven't been for decades.
Yeah.
Anyways, so we just want to give a big finger to...
big middle finger.
Yep.
And fuck you, Trump.
I hope you can hear this over the podcast.
Well, you know, and it's like a, it's a daily reminder of how Trump's unstated goal really is to wage war. And that's not hyperbole, but to wage mm-hmm. war on communities of color, yeah. be it through whatever means that he can, immigration, healthcare, housing with, you know, his boy Ben Carson up at the head of HUD, you know, raising and tripling the rate of rent for people who receive assistance, public assistance. I mean, they are literally waging a war on people of color. And this is just one more reminder of that. So that is not cool. On a lighter note, in another Pop the News we have for you guys today, this is a little bit more of a happier story.
This we is, need that.
Well, we need we that need right that. Now. Yes. This story involves weed, and weed is usually something that a lot of people like. but the big news is there's a lot of developments going on in weed legislation. This week saw two major developments. Number one, the gubernatorial candidate from the state of New York, Cynthia Nixon, mm-hmm. she is throwing her weight behind legalization of marijuana in New York. A lot of people took notice of that. She's saying if she wins the governor's race, beats Cuomo and the Republican candidate, she is going to back legalization in New York. And her justification was because she thinks that the laws governing marijuana are directly targeting people of color, communities of color. Yep. And she's putting out there that she sees the imbalance and she sees the injustice. So that was one big piece of news this week that caught my attention. Another one is that in the city of Seattle, the mayor and the city council have decided to vacate all of the misdemeanor charges of anybody who had a pot conviction in the past. And again, they're citing because they see the imbalance between convictions and communities of color.
Yeah.
And so this is a really great development in pot legalization news. Major cities are starting to decriminalize it. There's a huge list you guys can check out of all the cities that have been decriminalizing possession of pot. And a lot of cities are expunging the records of criminals, I don't want to call them criminals, but people who have mm-hmm. convictions in pot. And these are two really good developments for people of color. So definitely wanted to share that piece of news with you guys.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's only just now that it seems like there is going to be an economy.
Yeah, a big larger profit.
Economy based on it. And who's taking the lead? Of course, white people. And when they've been, you know, they're going to profit off of something that has been used to keep people of color down for so long and imprisoned, and you know, it's like,
yeah, not be able to get jobs, and just really keep them in there the same low socioeconomic status some have been forced to be in because of a track record.
Yeah, I mean, if that's not the very definition of privilege, I don't know what is.
Yeah, well, I think that's what's leading the way with a lot of these cities changing their laws and decriminalizing, because they see the disparity. On the one hand, a lot of states are legalizing marijuana. Like you said, there are industries that are arising. People, mostly white people, are making large sums of money now off of this multi-billion-dollar business that is growing.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, there are people who are still suffering under pot convictions for carrying, you know, dime bags and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
I should have people of color. Shouldn't have said track record, because some people have literally had one moment where they, you know, at 18-year-old, you know, just tried it for the first time, something, you know, and now their whole life is ruined.
Ruined because of that.
Yeah.
And there's this huge dichotomy because of that. It was interesting to note a couple of months ago, I don't know if you guys saw this, but the former Speaker of the House, John Boehner, came out in support for pot legalization. He said his thinking had evolved on this subject. I think what evolved is that he saw the money. He saw the green, the other kind of green.
Yeah. Yes.
And apparently he's on a board for a cannabis company. So
that's so convenient.
So how convenient is that? He says, quote, "My thinking on cannabis has evolved." Well, you know, I guess better late than never, right? Yeah. You know? I mean, this is a guy who literally, when he was Speaker of the House, was a proponent of the very draconian laws that imprison people of color
based on that. It was like, there's no way he could change his mind. I forget the word.
Right. He would never change his mind.
Irrefutably.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely.
But money changes everything.
It does.
For sure. We've got the forces of the Trump forces that are literally waging a war against people of color and their laws. And, you know, our attorney general right now, Jeff Sessions, he literally wants to bring the drug war back. Uh-huh. Not only does he want to, like, bring it back, he wants to, like, triple it. He wants private prisons. He wants more drug convictions. He wants more of that. While at the same time, at the local level and the progressive level, there is a big push to decriminalize, to expunge records, to, you know, get rid of all these petty convictions for pot possession. And I think what's driving that is two realizations. Number one, that a lot of people smoke pot. let's just be real about that. And number two, we are literally bankrupting ourselves by imprisoning people for no justifiable reason. In fact, I'll quote Cory Booker here on his legislation that he proposed. He says, quote, "Our country's drug laws are badly broken and need to be fixed." He says, "They don't make our communities any safer. Instead, they divert critical resources from fighting violent crimes, tears family apart, unfairly impact low-income communities and communities of color, and waste billions in tax dollars every year."
Wow.
So I think, you know, a lot of people are seeing the fact that this is a money issue as much as anything else.
Yeah. And why not divert some of that money into education?
Absolutely. Yeah, the other thing is that there are a slew of health benefits to legalizing marijuana. A lot of people who are in pain, veterans who, you know, it would help, you know, their PTSD, it would help some of their physical ailments and pain, a lot of pain management.
Yeah.
You know, people that can't eat because of their chemo, you know, it's there's a lot of health benefits.
Totally. And, you know, considering the opioid crisis that, you know, we've been experiencing, I mean, I think that's also driving a lot of people's conversion or their evolution in this thinking, is that they're starting to realize that we literally are becoming a nation of drug addicts in terms of opioids.
Yeah.
And marijuana, cannabis, you know, either the kind that gets you high or the kind that's just medicinal could be a huge benefit without all of the addictive side effects that opioids bring.
Yes, absolutely.
So, I mean, I think that's what's driving a lot of this conversion of thought, too.
Yeah, that's good.
All right, for this weekend, I Hear Ya, Michael's going to tell us a little bit about Harina de Marco.
She's an artist who I really started getting into earlier this year. One of her big hits actually came out last year, the one I'm going to refer to today. But, yeah, it's just this infectious, like, multicultural sound. I mean, she works in different languages. I think it's four different languages she speaks.
Wow.
She's originally Dominican, but based out of L.A., and it's just this amazing... God, I can't even describe the genre. It's just so such a great mix of so many things. But the song that I've just been... It's become my mantra, actually, is STFU.
STFU?
STFU. As in shut the fuck up. and then that's the chorus. And it's like, it's so great. Because I literally do just turn to, and I play that phrase over and over in my head. when I'm having some difficult situations lately, as we've talked about. at my school and whatnot. And in my head, I'm just like, shut the fuck up.
Wow.
Shut the fuck up. And it's really great. It's very contagious. Yeah, I believe the song came out like in October of last year.
Mm-hmm.
But she also had something on a TV show soundtrack, and it's, yeah, she's just a badass.
What originally attracted you to her sound?
It's such a great mix of so many different sounds that it almost becomes like alien in a way.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm into like... the weird shit. So, eccentricities are kind of a draw for me. And so, yeah, there's something about, I mean, I wish we could play some on the podcast.
What are some of her influences? what kind of musical influences do you hear in her music, or what comes out in her sound?
There's like a tribal, but like a, I can't even describe, but it also has like an, a very urban feel to it as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't, I'm not doing it justice, but,
so where can we hear?
What, anywhere, I mean, Apple Music, I'm sure on Spotify, YouTube has videos, there's actually a really great video for the song, and it's just super fun and contagious and, like, upbeat, but also kind of gives you that, you know, that empowering STFU moment.
Does she incorporate language? Like, does she speak?
Yeah, it's mostly in, this song is in English and Spanish.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I'm definitely going to have to check that out.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely.
So, Karina de Marco.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
I'll be checking that out.
Mm-hmm. All right, everybody clap your hands because it's time for the clap back heard around the world. Dave's going to give us a little bit of a yes, queen
yes,
moment.
God. Clap back time. Oh my yes. God, this week was the week of clapbacks, ladies and gentlemen. So many clapbacks to report, but I'm going to focus on the biggest clapback of them all this week, and that, of course, was the Correspondents' Dinner roasting of the Trump administration by Michelle Wolf. Did you guys see
her speech? She was genius.
That was amazing. You know, Dave Chappelle, the comedian, said something very, very astute. He said it was like a cathartic moment for progressives to see her speak truth to power.
Saying things we want to say.
How many times have we fantasized about saying those things in those people's faces?
Yes.
She actually got paid to do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this week's clapback, we're dedicating to Michelle Wolf and some of the best jokes from the Correspondents' Dinner. I just got a couple that I got to share with you guys because these were, like, so good. The whole thing was great. And you can read the whole speech. RollingStone.com actually printed the speech out if you guys want to read it. But here are a couple that caught my attention. Number one, here's Hillary. She says, quote, "It's kind of crazy that the Trump campaign was in contact with Russia when the Hillary campaign wasn't even in contact with Michigan. It's a direct flight. It's so close." I mean, come on. That is so great. And, you know, a lot of people got on her ass because they thought, oh, she was, like, being anti-conservative. She was, like, you know, being a liberal, blah, blah, blah. I think she, like, targeted everybody in her speech. She targeted Hillary. She targeted the press. You know, she targeted Trump. She says, of course, Trump isn't here, if you haven't noticed. He's not here, and I know, I would drag him here myself, but it turns out the President of the United States is one pussy that you're not allowed to grab. Anyway, her delivery was better than mine, but there were two jokes that I really were standouts because they were so satisfying to see her deliver.
I think I know where we're going to go.
You know which ones we're talking about. We're talking about the jokes about Kellyanne Conway.
Yes.
Is that her name?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, my God. God. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who were actually there in the audience watching this speech.
Well, they were at the table, weren't they?
Well, Sarah was at the table, yeah, but right. Conway was in the audience, of course, not looking too happy. Here's what she said about Kellyanne. She said, quote, "You guys got to stop putting Kellyanne on your shows. All she does is lie. If you don't give her a platform, she has nowhere to lie. It's like that old saying, if a tree falls in the woods, how do you get Kellyanne under that tree?" How satisfying was that?
Yes.
And then, of course, the one about Sarah Sanders, which, I mean, I had to watch several times. She says, quote, I actually really like Sarah Sanders. I think she's very resourceful. Like, she burns facts, and then she uses the ash to create a perfect smoky eye. Like, maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's lies. It's probably lies. So anyway, thank you, Michelle, for speaking truth to power in such a great way and really killing it, too. I mean, your roast was so funny. I don't care what the Fox News people say.
Those snowflakes.
Yeah.
Like that joke there, they turned it into her making fun of Huckabee's appearance.
Yeah,
really? What reality do you live in?
It started with lies. It ended with lies. Yeah, come on now.
Yeah. But I'm telling she you, does she could do have this, said... She does do a good smoky eye, though.
So she was giving her some props. Yeah. You know. It's not like she said slap a bitch. She was really like...
Yeah. And we do really need to get Kelly on under a tree somewhere.
Yeah. All right. Up next, folks, our opinions are like assholes. Some actually don't stink. We're going to be talking about forgiveness. You know, forgiveness is for the faint of heart, in my opinion. But we're going to go and hear another person's perspective on this.
So in this week's opinions, I want to talk about an article that I saw written by Sally Kohn. It's on the Huffington Post, for those who are interested in reading her article. She posits a very, very valid question. The article is it possible for us, or is it beneficial for us as liberals to forgive Trump voters? Not Trump himself, but the Trump voters. So before y'all pick up the firing squad, let me just share her opinions, okay? She makes some valid arguments.
I do agree.
Let me share. She says, okay, first of all, if you want to make things better, you got to stop hating Trump voters because, as she says, no person ever switches their political allegiances while simultaneously being told that they are stupid or dumb or their opinions are invalid or that they are hated. Exactly. So her whole argument is basically if we as liberals want to get further along in our own goals, we have to forgive Trump voters for voting for Trump. So what do you guys think?
Well, I want to honestly, you know, I made the joke about forgiveness is for the faint of heart. I really don't believe it that cut and dry. I think it takes a lot of work to forgive somebody, okay?
It takes,
you know, a lot of forgive, you know, a lot of...
It's not something that can be easily done sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do think there's something to you know, hate the ways, hate the sin, not the sinner, which, you know, that's also a conservative saying, but, you know... I do think we have to remember these are people. We are not in cars and, you know, everybody's trying to get to their own destination and running over each other. You know, I mean, I do believe that we should, you know, see them as people.
At the very least, they should be seen as people.
Well, but here's my thing. Okay, using your car analogy. If someone tries to run me off the road.
Yeah.
I'm going to chase their ass. And if, you know, if I can run them off the road...
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, but then you're going to end up in jail.
I'm kidding. Well, the part that's hard to separate is not just a vote,
right,
but the people are continuing to defend him and stand up for every horrible thing he does, one after another and after another, who are not, you know, thinking,
It's like, do you live in reality with the rest of us?
Exactly. And it's really, really upsetting to see, you know, that vote equals a lot of things. It equals you don't care about a man. Well, yeah. You don't care about a man who has said and done horrible things to women. That says a lot about a person.
Yeah.
You don't care about LGBTQ people.
Right.
Obviously. You're fine with him mocking disabled people and wanting and saying horrible things about black and brown people. And it's like, and it goes on and on. And that he invokes violence at his rallies. And it's like, where do you, which part are you going to forgive?
Which part is too far, you know? And these same voters, you know, it's like they're totally fine with being lied to. They're being lied to their face
daily,
and they're almost like okay with it. Like, that's the hard thing to swallow as a progressive. And why, you know, I brought this out is because it's a good question. Like, am I even possible, am I even capable of forgiving these people? And I know it sounds awful, but like, given that what you said, Michael, that vote counts for all of those things. It's a tacit acceptance of all of those things and more.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of them would like to, like a Roseanne Barr, for example. Let's take Roseanne, for example, right? Yeah. Of course, did you guys see the Roseanne revival?
No.
No.
I'm boycotting. Yeah. Not watching. Used to love Roseanne, used to watch the show. I will not support Roseanne now because she is a Trump supporter. And here's the reason why I can't support that. I can't get down. Because she, like so many Trump voters, they want to decouple and separate the vote from, like, all the things that that vote represents. Mm-hmm. Like, they just want to say, oh, we're all Americans, it's just a vote, I should have my political opinion, and you should have yours, don't hate me because I voted for Trump, right? That's their argument. It's like, no, I'm not hating you because you voted for Trump.
I hate what you represent.
I'm hating because you voted for all that that represents. Like, yeah. It's what you believe. Like you said, hate the sin. Hate the sin, right?
Yeah.
Not the sinner.
Yeah.
I hate all of that that you believe. And I, you know, why is it always up to us progressives to be the ones, the big boys with the big boy pants, mm-hmm. or the big girls with the big dresses, and pull, you know what I mean? Like, why is it always us to be the adults? Why is it always the progressives that have to compromise?
That's the only way it's going to be
and get it together.
Because Michelle Obama told us, when they go low, we go high.
Yeah. But sometimes you want to get in the ditch and slash a bitch.
I know.
Yeah, we're the ones who have to be the big boys.
Well, I'll tell you, I thought about, you know, when my father, who was a Baptist preacher, he invited a man over to our house who admitted at the dinner table that he used to be racist, because my dad sat him down at the table, invited him over for dinner, and said, you know what, I just want you to kind of explain this thing I heard in your sermon. I was listening to your tape because I've always admired you, and I heard this disturbing thing that you said against blacks. And the man admitted, I have been a racist up to the point when I sat at your table.
Wow.
I was just curious. I've never been invited over to a black person's house, and I just was curious. And he admitted that he'd been a racist, but just the pure, authentic hospitality that we had shown him, and him seeing that my dad was just like everybody else, actually did change his mind.
Sorry, that's me.
Go ahead and pour a drink.
That's not Kim peeing while she talks. That's
literally tequila. This conversation has gotten
he's driven him to drink.
Drinking me to get the bottle of tequila out. But yes.
I think it takes the Malcolm X's and the Martins to just have both. I think we need both.
Yeah. We gotta have both,
yeah.
Right?
We gotta have both. You gotta people that say that draw the line and say, hell no, and other people that are like, well, you know. I mean, I'm not saying the people that are in the middle are Uncle Toms, okay? But there's a lot of respect that you got to give the Uncle Toms, because they were the ones also helping, you know, bridge the gap and help slaves reach freedom, because they were able to play
educate.
Double agents and educate
people. It's a really tough subject. I guess the ultimate, like, guiding light is that only love can drive out hate, or whatever the old saying is, you know what I mean?
Love wins.
Hate cannot kill hate. Hate cannot destroy hate. Only love can do that. And that's something that I grapple with daily whenever I think about this question, because it's so easy to just hate the Trump voters. Like, it's just so easy to see them as, like, this racist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name your phobic thing.
Yeah.
And knowing that I am diametrically opposed to that, it's easy for me to just say, I hate that, therefore I hate that person. But, you know what I mean, what does that end? You know what I mean? At some point, where does that lead?
Yes,
you know, the only end result of hate is war.
Right.
Yeah, that's the only place it ever goes.
Yeah.
You know, and if we don't want that, then we have to have love on some point. And I guess it's like you're saying, we have to be the ones.
It sucks.
It's up to us liberals. You know, we have to be the ones, because we know they're not going to be the first ones to take that step.
Yeah, the things they're representing is hate. I do not forgive what that represents, but I do have to see them as a person who is capable of... I'm just not going to give up on people, ultimately.
That's a
you
good
know,
way to be.
I'm just, yeah. You know, you got to have some faith for tomorrow, Lord Jesus.
Yeah. This week in No Ma'am, we'll be talking about a local case here in Austin, Texas that caught a lot of people's attention. Kim, we were actually talking a little bit about this earlier before we started recording, and had some really kind of stark questions that it brought up. I'm talking, of course, about a case in which a local Austin man, James Miller, was found not guilty he was found guilty recently of criminal neglect and homicide for the death in 2015 of a man named Daniel Spencer. Backstory is that Daniel Spencer apparently was a gay man, and they were friends, or buddies at least. They had a night where they were hanging out, and apparently, according to Mr. Miller, Mr. Spencer started making unwanted sexual advances and things like that, which led to Mr. Miller becoming violent and ending the life of Mr. Spencer. A very tragic story, obviously. The thing that got so much people's attention is that Mr. Miller used what is being called the gay panic defense, stating that if a heterosexual man feels that a gay man is being sexually aggressive toward them, it can justify the violent response in their defense. Mm.
So basically they're saying if a man feels uncomfortable by the advances of another man, he can do whatever he has to do. Whereas, okay, well, what about, is it okay for women to do the same thing to men who make those unwanted advances?
Exactly. It's such a double standard.
So stupid.
Yeah, it's pretty, I mean, but you brought up a very interesting question, though, which was, you know, were the advances made by Mr. Spencer actually physical in nature?
Yeah.
Like, was this, or could this have been a circumstance where, you know, the Mr. Miller, you know, felt fear for his life?
Yeah, or that, you know, that he was going to be raped, you know, if that was the situation. Like, we don't know how far this guy went. I mean, I am totally, the gay panic, that is ridiculous. I mean, but if the guy genuinely was afraid that he was going to be raped and was trying to protect himself, I mean, it seems extreme, but I don't know. I'd like to hear more details.
Yeah, well, according to court documents, Mr. Miller testified that he stabbed Mr. Spencer twice, and that he was older than, you know, Mr. Spencer, so he felt that he had an age advantage. And he felt that he, since he was 8 inches taller than him, he felt like he was physically, could overpower him.
Yeah, this is specifically Spencer that was.
That's what he was testifying against. That he was younger, he was taller, and that he perceived a threat, a physical threat. I'm sure that's probably what the defense used.
Yeah,
right.
I'm sure.
But it just raises the question, like Michael brought up. It's like, you know, that defense is so razor thin. I mean, anybody who basically says, you know, oh, well, somebody was coming on to me, so therefore that justifies the physical violence that I acted upon that person.
Yeah.
Which is, you can understand why gay rights groups are up in arms about this decision, as you can imagine.
Women should be up in arms about this decision. I mean, it's an insult to us with all these weak laws, you know, with rape. I mean, you know, and I'm sure there have been some women who, trying to protect their lives, have had, you know, had manslaughter. I just think it's
But do you think in those cases it would be justified then?
I mean, if they weren't trying, if the intent was that I'm not trying to kill them, I'm protecting myself, I think is justified. I do. I feel like if you're trying to protect yourself, and I mean, if police can get off for killing people, and just because they were afraid for their life. I mean, someone that's going to be raped, you don't want to be raped. That's a horrific, horrific experience. And if you're just reacting to defending yourself, you know, and you've got something in your hand and you're like, no, don't come towards me. And you actually stab him in the wrong place, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the core. I think that's what needs to be proven in court. I think that's what needs to be proven in court, is that this was a violent attack that was thwarted by my self-defense versus I didn't like the advance that you made, so I stabbed you, and then I freaked out, and so now I'm going to say it's gay panic.
Right,
you know
what I mean? Right, right.
That's horrible.
Kind of reminds,
No, ma'am.
So we'll have to dig deeper into that story to see exactly what was said in court, because that would be really interesting to know. Also in No Ma'am, Mike, what do you have?
Here in our lovely state of Texas.
Oh, my God.
In Spring, Texas, actually. A principal at a school read this, said some horrible, horrible comments as a joke, and some teachers did not think it was funny. Do you know what I'm talking about, Dave?
I saw this. What were the details?
So basically, this woman, Principal Shauna Swearingen, they have a student, an African-American student, who is special ed and has a tendency to flee, to like try to leave campus, and but her joke was that you know, next time I'm just gonna call the police. We're gonna let him run. We're gonna call the police and tell him that he has a gun, so they'll show up faster.
Oh my God!
That is so bad.
Like,
no, ma'am.
No fucking ma'am. How dare you?
Wow.
And so she's getting flack from it.
Yeah, last I heard, that kid was shot.
Yeah. Well, last I've heard, she has not been fired.
Okay.
There are people who are putting pressure on the school district, Spring School District. So if any of y'all feel like you want to contact them and give them your opinion about an educator, a leader of a school, saying something so insensitive.
So irresponsible.
Like, she thought it was a joke. Yeah.
She said it as a joke.
That's ridiculous that she would actually do. I mean, that's like prank calling.
Why would she think that was funny?
No. She said it to other people as a joke.
Right, she didn't actually.
She wouldn't
do
actually
it.
Do it.
Right, but it's still,
But why would she think that's funny? Yeah. Number one, and number two, think about what the humor is, or where the humor is derived from.
The
humor is derived from the fact that if the police show up and see a black kid, they're likely to shoot him. So funny for white people. If you ever wanted like a more glaring example of like white privilege and like white supremacy, but like it's like so subconscious even.
Yeah.
That is a glaring example
of
that.
Yes, absolutely.
So, and what was that principal's
name?
It's
so racially insensitive.
It is Ponderosa Elementary School. It's an elementary school, my dear.
Elementary school.
Elementary child that she's joking about. Ponderosa Elementary School, Shauna Swearingen.
Okay, she's going to be getting a letter from me.
There could be a lot of swearing at Swearingen.
Not cool.
No, on the count of three. One, two, three.
No, ma'am. Well, this next story, man, I have to pull myself back from being enraged and just want to just beat him with the homie. Sock, you know, remember from In Living Color,
homie don't play that.
You know, I just want to, I'm mi gente with one of those homie the clown socks, you know. Kanye West,
yeah, I forgotten about homie the clown.
Yes.
Oh my God,
yes.
Take me back. We need the homie the clown don't play that sock for Kanye. Kanye. Not only he's doubling down, y'all, he is not walking it back. Like, you would think the first one was enough, but no, he need more. So Kanye, for those who don't know, who are living under a rock, appeared on TMZ recently. For some reason.
Normally celebrities run from TMZ.
He's desperate, man.
He's like, let's go in the studio and sit down and let me say crazy shit. Well, this week's crazy shit was he, of course, equated slavery with a choice. I guess his argument was trying to be that, you know, because slavery lasted for 400 years, he was questioning why slaves didn't just, like, you know, revolt.
Yeah.
And were we just choosing to hang out? And, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he almost equated it with, like, a mental choice, of course. And it, as you can imagine, got a lot of clapback, a lot of negative attention, justifiably so. And, I mean, what can you say? What's going on
there? I almost feel like saying maybe this should be the last segment we ever talk about him, because I do think he is saying shit to stir the pot, to drum up attention for his projects that are coming out, and it's disgusting.
It might his agent be doing that, because the man looked like he was affected by something on that. When you look at the segment, like, if you watch it, him on there, he seems like he's under the influence of something.
He doesn't seem quite...
Well,
right.
He doesn't seem quite right, you know? And when he's asking the guy that, like, put him down, like, can he give him a hug and all that, you know? Did y'all see that?
I did.
Yeah. It's like, he seemed like he was not in all his right mind.
Well, two trains of thought, right? He's not right. Something's going on there with Kanye. Or it's all for attention and, you know, he's just trying to get some hype up for his new music that's coming out. But at the same time, he's going about it in a very peculiar way because, I mean, you know, his core audience is still going to be black people. And black people are not having this. Like,
no,
black people are not going with
this
Kanye on this.
I've seen some comments online like friends of mine who are posting like, you know, what the fuck's wrong with him, and other African Americans who are like, oh, you know, it's just, it's, we're in it for the music. And I literally, like, when this went down, I went into Apple Music and I removed any of his
music. I was going to say, I will never listen to
him. I don't want to make him another penny.
Yeah,
even accidentally.
I mean, if he's trying to gain some voters, he's also losing people.
Voters?
Because, well, you know what I'm saying, listeners, excuse me. Sorry.
Yeah, anyway, he did say he was going to run for president.
Yeah, 2020. Lord. Oh my gosh, that man, he needs help. Here's the thing. I think, you know, and he was trying to defend himself by saying that, you know, it's that now people are mentally enslaved, and you know, like he would never be beaten, or, you know, he would never. And it's like, you have a lot of nerve. Mm-hmm. You are completely out of touch. You have no idea if somebody was after your ass.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? He's always preying on the weak. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say the weak, but I'm just, you know, saying things on about people without giving real thought to how that is going to affect the people.
Well, a perfect response to this that I saw on Twitter was from this professor. Her profile is Prof. BLM Kelly, so it's Blair LM Kelly, and she wrote, "Haven't watched the whole Kanye event today, working my way up to it. I will say, though, that a milder version of the slavery is a choice argument is made by uninformed people all the time. I've had young men in my courses say, they never would have enslaved me. People aren't aware of the alienation of people ripped from their homes, abused, walked hundreds of miles across Africa, sometimes so far they ceased understanding the language spoken around them.
Exactly.
People don't know the brutality of the slave cattles, were people who were held on the coast, branded, still holding out hope for escape or reconnection for a loved one.
Yeah, exactly.
Could they have survived the devastation of the Middle Passage? Packed less humanely than animals below the deck of a ship, chained to people who were sick and dying.
Yeah.
Could they have survived being sold like a good at market by people in a foreign land speaking a foreign tongue? Mm. Could they have survived torturous work in scraps of clothing, eating food that was unwanted? Not only did my ancestors and Kanye's ancestors survive, they managed to make a way to make a new culture, remake family and faith, and in the process make a culture so formidable that it continues to change the world.
Amen.
Amen. Yes. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And that gave me chills.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why I think so many black people, so many people in general, but especially the black community, is like up in arms about this comments, because it disrespects what that professor's talking about. It disrespects our legacy.
Absolutely.
And where we come from and what we've endured. And yes, good on her for pointing that out.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It really does speak to this younger generation really needing to be educated on what slavery really entailed emotionally and mentally, because there's so many young people that are out of touch with the appreciation for what our ancestors have gone through. You know, just to live the way they're living. It's like, come on, people, rise up. Don't wallow where you are.
I mean, part of the problem that we've mentioned in a previous podcast is like social studies are out the window in education.
Sorry, say it again. I spoke over you.
No, social studies have been thrown out the window in education. It's all math, reading, science when it's time to take a science test, and that's it.
Yeah.
A great way that she ended her Twitter rant, which is really good, was denigrating their lives at this point for attention and spare change is such an embarrassment.
Yes.
Well, that pretty much, I think that's what Kanye's new album should be called.
Yes.
Such an embarrassment.
Yes. And, out of touch.
And let me just throw some more shade just
roots.
A second real quick here. Mm-hmm. So like, why is Kanye famous? I'm just going to put that out there.
I'm telling you, people
is
say he's
he
a
really
genius.
That good of a rapper? Like, for really though?
He's a good producer.
He produces good? Okay.
But he has no singing voice.
I don't think he can rap, y'all. Like, I mean, if you listen to his raps, I'm like, oh, shoot, I got some fucking students in my school rap better than that. But anyway.
He's never impressed me enough to buy an album.
And he married into the perfect family for that. fame for no reason.
Fame for no reason. Mm. Wow. Kanye. Yeah.
Such an embarrassment.
Homie, don't play that. Yuck.
We continue with Lecciones Learned. And we have Dave taking the reins on this one.
So, Lecciones Learned, for those who don't know, is when we teach Kim some Spanish. Yay. Because if Kim can learn Spanish, so can you. So, this week, in our Lecciones Learned, I have a question for you, Kim. Are you ready?
All right. Okay. Let's hear it.
I want you, and I know you can do this, I want you to say, I'm an American in Spanish.
Yo soy Americanos a la...
Close.
That wasn't too bad.
That wasn't bad. Yeah. So this is kind of a trick question.
I never took Spanish.
That's okay. The reason why we ask is this is kind of a trick question. You said yo soy Americano, which is technically correct. You did say it correctly.
Yes.
You would try to say Los Estados Unidos, the United States, which is fine. But the trick question was the word Americano. So here is the lesson.
Gringo.
Here is the lesson learned today, guys. For those who don't know, and Americans make this mistake all the time, ladies and gentlemen. I actually learned this lesson the hard way by going to Mexico a lot.
Oh, no.
And they would always ask me, you know, where are you from? Yo soy Americano. And they would be like, well, I'm an American too. Right? The whole thing in Latino culture here in this hemisphere is that we're all Americans. We all live in the continent of America.
Yeah. Mexicanos Americanos.
Yes, they're Americans too. So are South Americans. They're all Americanos. So the trick was, soy Norte Americano. I am North American.
Okay.
Now, I know that may seem nitpicky, but here's the reason why we should know this lesson, guys. It's because when you do go to a Latin-speaking country, like Mexico, for example, and you say, yo soy Mexicano, they actually look at it as like kind of like hoity-toity gringo.
Oh,
well, we're Americans too, bitch.
Yeah, okay.
That's the way they interpret it. And I have been schooled many times on the fact that I'm a Norte Americano, not just Americano.
Oh, so how do you, so you actually say North Americano?
North American.
Norte Americano. Norte Americano.
And it was like such a thing that I'd overlook all the time, and I'd be like, why am I saying this wrong?
Oh my God, I sounded so racist.
Gringa.
You know, I had it just kind of reminds me, I had a Jewish friend of mine who said Japs, and that's, you know, Jewish American princess. You know, it's still derogatory, but she could use it, right? But everyone in the room was like, you just said Japs! And I was like, that's a derogatory term towards Japanese people. You're not supposed to say that. And she was like, but I didn't know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same thing, you know. I just didn't know. So that's why you gotta take pause sometimes, people.
Sometimes you gotta take pause.
Don't go all
postal.
You gotta
think about the cultural ramifications of your use of language in certain spaces.
Yes, but at the same time, I ask for mercy.
Of course.
You know,
and patience.
Yeah. And if you want to be really specific, you would say, I'm of the United States, the United States is Estados Unidos.
Wait, say it again slowly.
Estados Unidos.
Estados Unidos.
Which is United
Estados
States.
Estados Unidos. That makes sense.
And so, if you want to be specific when saying, you would say, yo soy estadounidense.
Unidense. What's unidense?
United.
Estados Unidense.
Yeah, unidos is united. Unidense is like the suffix that indicates you're from somewhere.
Oh.
Like in English, somebody from Sudan
idense.
Would be a Sudanese.
Idense. Okay, unidos idense. That makes
Estados
sense.
Unidense.
Oh, unistados. Wait. Oh. Unistados. What?
Estados.
Uni. What?
Estados.
Uni. Uni. Uni estados.
No, there's no uni estados.
Oh, my Lord.
Estados.
Okay. Estados.
And she hasn't been drinking, y'all. All right. Okay. So,
if ADD.
Estados Unidos.
And Estados Unidos. Uh-huh, Estados and
person,
Unidos.
And a person would be estadounidense.
Estadounidense.
There you go.
Estadounidense.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, Lord Jesus. See, yeah. You know what it is? I'm a visual person. Y'all need to start writing some shit on a 3x5 card for a sister that needs some visual so you can break the syllables down.
That's true.
That's actually a really good idea.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Imagine three teachers in a room.
No, but you don't get, you know what though? Honestly, shut up. I'd have to do it this way if I was in, you know, another country. I'd have to, like, I wouldn't have 3x5 cards then, so I just need to listen better.
Yeah, sometimes you just gotta, like, you know, go into the pain, you yeah, know?
Just...
And just, like,
instead of panicking. Because yeah. I'm, like, panic. I'm, like, what? What?
I feel you. Or if you have to, you can just say, soy gringa.
There we go. That's much easier. But you can learn Spanish, too, there.
As always, we end with eso, eso, eso.
Eso, eso, eso.
Where we focus on something positive, something great that happened during the week, maybe someone we want to give a shout out to for being a badass.
Yes.
And this week, we're going to be speaking about Mandy Manning. She's an English teacher from Spokane, Washington, and she was the 2018 National Teacher of the Year.
Way to go, Mandy. Mm-hmm.
And so she had the great honor of meeting with your president.
Y'all's president.
But the great part about this is she took this opportunity to deliver letters to him from students. She's an English teacher, and she works with immigrant and refugee students. And I think it's badass that she brought these letters from her students, who are people that your president is targeting with immigration policies. And thank you so much, Mandy. You are amazing for using that platform to get up there and be like, okay, yes, the whole world's looking at me, and now I want them to see.
Yeah,
I want to elevate the voices of my students and the populations that they come from in front of the whole world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was very, more than socially responsible. It was just, I think it's heroic because, you know, it takes a lot of courage when you could have capitalized on, hey, I'm meeting the president, I could get some, you know what I'm saying? You know,
some accolades. My time in the sun.
Yeah, exactly. But she took the risk to, you know.
Yeah, apparently she's not afraid of speaking truth to power.
No. One of the letters that she delivered to him from one of her students, who is from Rwanda, and the letter said that he hopes the president would model for others positive messaging around our immigrant and refugee communities.
Wow.
Because why? His words have a lot of weight.
Wow.
So.
Wow, and how old were these children? What grade?
She worked
elementary, right?
Is it elementary?
Okay, elementary.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Wow. The children, you know, they have such innocent truth to them. You know, they come into this world.
They speak simple truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the thing will be is what's his face going to read them?
Will he be
Orange Cheeto? President Orange Cheeto face? Yeah. Will he actually read them? Does he actually read anything? Can he read?
Well, we need to get someone to read those letters on Fox News, and then he'll listen to
them. Then he'll know what they say.
Yes.
I don't think the man is capable of comprehension. He would not be able to put it together.
He reads like a fourth grader. You see him read those teleprompters? My God.
Oh, my God.
But anyway, Mandy, you get this week's SOSOSO because you are a true hero, as Kim said. You are a hero to us, and speaking truth to power, we love it.
SOSOSO! And so we come to the close of another episode of El Puente Podcast. thank you all for tagging along on this journey as we document these conversations that we always have as friends.
People of color.
People of color. Feminists.
Austinites.
Austinites. LGBTQ, XYZs, and all the letters in between.
Yes. Lovers of life.
Yeah. So thank you guys again for taking this journey with us. If you have any feedback, please feel free to email us.
On either side.
Yeah. You can email us at bocamadremedia@gmail.com. And or you can always give us a good rating in iTunes if you'd like, please. Just connect with us. See what we want to see what you have to say. So until next time, catch you later.